Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
The 2%'s right over here.
Oh, hey, Jenna. I didn't know you shopped here.
Yeah. Anything to support local food. Know what I mean?
I definitely do. Though that's not the only thing you do in the name of Good Eats, obviously.
Well, true. I also host Eating Matters every Wednesday at 5 p.m., where we talk about food policy and how it impacts all of us. Be sure to tune in.
All right, yeah, gotta get the plug in there. I get it.
Yep, I'm hashtag shameless.
You know what else you can do to support the local food community, right?
Well, yeah. Make a donation to Heritage Radio Network, the world's pioneer food radio station.
That's right. And I gotta call you out on the whole local thing.
What do you mean?
Well, The Farm Report, A Taste of the Past, Japan Eats. Those are shows that take you around the country and the world.
I'll give you that. So how can listeners give their support?
It's pretty easy. Just go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the big red heart in the top right corner. It's pretty easy from there.
Thanks.
Today's program is brought to you by Nettle Meadow Farm Cheese and Spirits Pairing, taking place on Saturday, June 18th at Nettle Meadow Farm. For more information, visit nettlemeadowcheeseandspirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, meadowcheeseandspirits.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Jerobi from A Tribe Called Quest / Eats Rhymes in Life, and you're here listening to Heritage Radio Network.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Told me the dark things. Welcome to Snacky Tunes. We are sitting in the dining area of Mariscos Jaliscos with Bill Esparza, James Beard award-winning writer. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks, Darren. Great to be here.
Thank you. That's it, right? With all the titles.
Yeah.
That's the one that you lead with. I got to say, banner year for you. James Beard Award. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Announcement of your first book. Fourth year of Tacolandia, which we're going to be talking about later.
Yeah, biggest ever.
But that's, I mean, that's awesome.
It's been a good year. And it's not over yet.
No, I mean, we're not even halfway through. So let's go back to the beginning. Love of food, lifelong L.A. What do you love about L.A. and the Latin American cuisine here and like that you've essentially become the champion of?
Well, I mean, for what I like to do and what I like to write about and what I like to eat, Los Angeles is the place to be.
This is the
epicenter of, you know, Mexican, Latin American cuisine. And not all Latin American cuisines, but we have some shortages here and there. But it's really the epicenter of Mexican food in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, moving recently from New York, while I do miss the pizza, I did find some good bagels out here and some passable pizza. Mexican food always came up short. And so living out here, actually, Mariscos was one of the first places I went to. And I went, okay, part of my culinary-ness is home.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that. When I go to New York, I'm looking for pizza and bagels myself, not tacos.
No, of course. So when did you start becoming this champion of the Latin American cuisine? How did you start to, because, you know, really, like, everyone's sort of known about L.A. cuisine and sort of the smaller ethnic pockets, and in the last few years it's grown to a more global recognition of it, of its prowess. But when did you start picking up that mantle?
Well, I started around 2007
sure.
with my blog. And I had already...
Say your blog.
Yeah, Street Gourmet LA.
Fantastic
which
blog.
Which is, you know, I'm not so active on there these days.
I mean, you grow, but you started there.
Yeah, I did start there. And I was also on Chowhound, which I'll... Oh, goodness.
Goodness.
Let's not go back there.
Wow, you just brought me back. I just had to take a moment there because I just went back to some Chowhound days.
That's like middle school. You don't go back to visit.
That used to be... If I was going somewhere, first stop for research, Chowhound. Now, not so much.
Yeah, well, yeah, no. Well, I got off there quite a while ago. You know, I was traveling as a musician.
Sure.
And that's how I learned a lot about this food. I mean, I went all over Mexico. At this point, I know 28 states. And, I mean, not just I've stopped there. I mean, I went
like,
there.
No.
Went there multiple times, wow. Multiple cities. And so I got to do that touring with the singer Marisela.
Oh, yeah.
And then I also worked in, you know, I did some stuff in South America, Central America. So I was getting to know all these cuisines, mm-hmm. and I was looking for places to eat, and I was finding them. I was like, wow, we have this in Los Angeles. That's awesome, you know?
So you were, like, going out, experiencing, and coming home, being like, oh, wow, I didn't know that this was here. I didn't even know to look for this cuisine.
Yeah, I just come back from Honduras, and I'm like, I want to have some Honduran food, and I would find places like, wow. And of course, I would try to find the best ones. And because, you know, I was having a great reference for that food, because being there, I was looking for the ones that were closest to the food that I had while I was there.
Now, so many times you go out on the road and you have this amazing bite of food in this magical part of the world. And then you come back and you find that your city has one restaurant.
Right.
Sort of does it. But then it doesn't live up to it. What were you finding when you were coming home and that LA had to offer?
Well, I was finding, you know, that, I mean, especially after being in places like Mexico City, where I've been so many times, is that the variety that we have here is so, it's such a broad view of Mexican cuisine, you know, more than even Mexico City. Mexico
sure.
City has better street food. It has better, I mean, way better high-end cooking and mid-level and all these, I mean, and so much volume, but it doesn't have things like from Nayarit. You can't get Nayarit-style seafood. You can't get stuff like these tacos here at Mariscos Jalisco, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this is the type of place, and there's dozens, if not hundreds, over the city that you'd be lucky to have to in any town in any part of the world.
Yeah, and we have places that really live up to their best version in Mexico, you know?
Now, listen, I know... Asking you to pick favorites is like saying which child is your favorite. But for those who would want a cross section of restaurants when they come into LA and they have a weekend, what would you recommend?
Well, yeah, you're right. I don't have favorites. I love so many of these places. Mariscos Jalisco is a place that I come to a lot. Also, Connie Seafood mm-hmm. is a place I go to. I love Gorilla Tacos. You know,
oh, yeah.
Especially they sit up on Thursday nights, not too far from me. and there's a wine bar that they set up at, and so I'm at the wine bar and I'm having
Silver Lake.
Yeah, exactly.
Silver Lake wine, tacos and wine.
Exactly. That's my lifestyle.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Shout out to those guys. Those guys are great.
Yeah. So there's a lot of places. There's a place I go to that's a house in East LA that they have birria. You know, I go there quite often.
So that's the infamous house that's a little off the radar.
Yes.
Yes.
We did a segment on CNN about mm-hmm. that place.
I remember seeing that segment and going like, I wish I knew someone who could tell me about it. And once we go off the record, you can tell me about it.
Sure.
So the passion's there. The knowledge is there. Let's talk about the James Beard Award that you got for food coverage. Were you surprised? Were you like, I've put in this work, I sort of feel that everything is sort of going to this moment?
Well, we felt really good about the issue from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
My editor, Leslie Barger-Suter, and Mary Melton,
mm-hmm.
you know, we were all very excited about this issue. And I would say putting it together was really... It's like, this is really interesting. No one's really done this before mm-hmm. quite like this. And also, tacos are... They've been having their moment, I would say, for the last couple of years, and they're continuing to have moments. So it's really the time to write this.
Yeah, and I think tacos, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, are having a moment in more diversity than fried chicken and hamburgers did, which did have that when the recession sort of swung back to like a more comfort food. But tacos have such a diversity and like depth of flavor and importance in culture that I think there's a more significance there when you start to really scratch the surface.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd say a couple years ago, maybe 5 years ago, people mm-hmm. were, forever, people have been trying to do, like, I'm going to do fancy tacos. I'm going to, you know,
sure.
Bring my chef. And people have been trying to do that, and they weren't really doing well. Until, like, Wes Avila came along
mm-hmm.
and showed everybody, like, you could use, you know, farm ingredient, you know, farm-to-table stuff, and you could use really fine products and make really great tacos that still honor the tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think since him, everybody's starting to slowly figure that out, and everybody's getting really good. I mean, you know, even that are these are this is not Mexican, but it's really good and tasty, and they've figured out how to make good tacos. So everybody's doing really great right now, you know?
Have you seen tacos that have gone... I mean, look, I never feel that there's a bad slice of pizza or a bad taco, but have you seen tacos that have sort of tried to reinvent themselves and missed the mark?
Oh, what I'm saying is that up till Wes Avila,
sure.
everybody was just making stupid, I mean, things that don't really, they aren't tacos. They're just stuff on a tortilla. And no matter what you call it or what, you know, filet of this, it just wasn't any good. It wasn't a taco, and it didn't come together as a dish.
So how do you define a taco then?
Well, it has to have... Well, you define a taco is, you know, food served in a flour or corn tortilla.
Sure.
That's it. But
yes, that's the broad definition. But for you, if you look this up and say, this is not a taco, even though it meets those basic requirements, what to you?
A taco is a dish, just like anything else.
Sure.
And it comes together, it really comes together as a stew in your mouth, you know? So, like when you have a fish taco mm-hmm. in Baja, they, you know, people get freaked out over, like, oh, you're putting mayo. It's like, you have to have the mayo, just like you have mayo on a sandwich to help lubricate, to bring those ingredients on the inside
sure.
into the bread. It's the same thing with the taco. So you put cream on it, you put some salsa. But if you just put a fish on there and salsa, you're not going to get that. When you take that first bite, it's not going to, like, fall apart into this nice stew of flavors, you know?
No, it's not.
And so you need that. Even carne asada has to be tender, but usually they do something with either the salsa or the condiments or the tortilla itself to kind of pull in, or even in the north where they use flour tortillas, you know, it really comes together as a stew once you take a bite.
Now, you recently just wrote about flour tortillas and
yes.
about how, I mean, I've been a flour tortilla man my entire life, and I understand that may have been looked down upon, and I felt like whenever I'd be like, I would order flour very quietly, but also spending time in Texas and Austin and things like that, like, I love flour tortillas, and you have become a recent champion.
Oh, no, I'm not a recent champion. I've always been.
Okay, fine. That's good to know.
I mean, I know, some of my favorite states in Mexico are Sonora, Nuevo León, Chihuahua, and for years I've been going to these places. And see, in Mexico, this thing about flour tortillas and it's not a thing. Now, they might have a thing in the south, like in Oaxaca or... you know, Puebla, where they're saying the corn. But in Puebla, they use flour tortillas, too, for their at the Tacos Árabes stand. They have Tacos Árabes, which is on a flour-type tortilla. It's more like pita style. And then they have Tacos Orientales, which they do on just a corn tortilla. They do the same taco árabe on a corn tortilla. And then they have this thing called Tacos de Harina, which is the taco árabe meat on, you know, the marinated pork on a flour tortilla. Mm. So they use them there, too. There isn't this thing. It's really more about non-Latinos not knowing Mexican food that are always saying things that are wrong.
The people who get it, but I have to know the least about stuff.
Well, I mean, you know, you have even major writers in town that are, you know, debating, saying that burritos are not as good as tacos. Well, burritos are actually tacos. They're tacos de harina. And in Mexico, everybody knows that. You might, again, you might have a preference or you might have a regionality thing where I'm from here. And, you know, if you're from Sonora, flour tortillas are the best.
Right.
And they're amazing, you know. And if you're from Chiapas, it's corn, you know. So, but this kind of thing of saying that flour tortillas are not legit, it's really only coming from non-Latinos that don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Right. So off the James Beard Award.
Yeah.
Off the championship of flour tortillas. You also have your first book coming out that you announced a couple of weeks ago.
That's correct.
What is, I assume the subject is going to be?
Well, it's, you know, Prospect Park pitched me.
Shout out to them.
Colleen Dunn Bates, about this book, this idea she had called El Mexicano. And the idea is, no one's ever really done a book about L.A. Mexican food, which, honestly, somebody should have done this a long time ago. But
was this one of those ideas that you're like, please don't let someone figure this out before I do. Please, please, please.
Well, I think think that's what she was thinking. Yeah. I mean, that's what she relayed to me. Is like, I want to do this before someone else does it. And you know, so I'm so honored to be doing it because I feel like this is something I've been really writing about over the past couple. I've talked about, you know, the regional cuisines here, also the Mexican-American, and also the new chefs. I think I've been on top of all that stuff.
Sure.
And so doing this book is just a natural extension of what I've already been doing.
I mean, I think as a publisher, you're a dream writer to come along and the champion writing the book on all the other heroes.
Yeah, it's time people, I mean, really in this country, it's time people started acknowledging, and I'm talking about the mainstream press, acknowledging the Mexicans that are creating this food, and not just the traditional vendors or the old school Mexican, but the new, you know, Mexican American chefs that are pushing the, making an original cuisine, which is really what you're supposed to do as a chef.
Absolutely.
You know, you are supposed to bring your own thing to it and bring something original to the table, literally. And these guys are doing it, you know, and for so long we've been looking, because people don't know about Mexican cuisine and writers don't know about Mexican cuisine. They're focusing on people that have PR that are usually not Mexican and aren't doing as good of a job as the people that are creating it, you know? So I think that this book is really going to be a lot about that, about talking about these stories.
Amazing. Well, Bill, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to listen to a track, which, because it's almost summertime, one of our favorite Brooklyn bands, Midnight Magic, and then we're going to come back and talk about Tacolandia, which I am very, very excited about. We are coming at you from Mariscos Jaliscos out in L.A. here on Snacky Tunes. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here with James Beard, award-winning writer Bill Esparza, and also Taco Razo.
Yes, the world's first Taco Razo.
Which is?
Someone who takes pictures of tacos.
Oh, like pop. I got it. I was reading it, and I was go, is this like a taco czar, taco empresario, but Taco Razo? Very awesome. And we are here.
It's just a fun thing, of course.
It's awesome. I mean, when you showed up and you... You're a man after my own heart when you're like, listen, I know we had plans to eat here, but I saw another taco place on Instagram and I had to go there first. Say no more. I understand.
Well, you know, duty calls.
Duty calls.
Had a gig.
Came around the neck. How were those tacos?
Really great. And those are going up on...
Can you say who they are?
Yeah, they're tacos al vapor, steamed tacos from the state of Jalisco. Mm. So chicharrón and beans and potatoes with chorizo. Mm. Nice wet tortillas.
I may have to go run there afterward. Yeah. I think I may have to run there afterward. So we're super excited. Coming up June 11th in Los Angeles, 4th annual Tacolandia.
Yes.
Which is, for those who don't know,
Tacolandia is the largest taco festival in the United States, with held by LA Weekly, and I am the curator. And I am bringing the best tacos in Los Angeles, and we're also bringing vendors from San Diego, Arizona, London, Sacramento, and, of course, two states in Mexico, Baja California, and the state of Nuevo León.
That's amazing. I mean, you want to talk about a scene that's grown over there. It's the Mexican scene in London. It used to be non-existent.
Yeah, it's actually growing.
It's actually growing.
And we've got their top vendor coming.
Which is?
Brettos,
yes. I think I remember being there in 2003, studying abroad, and paying $29 for a mediocre burrito because I had been missing Mexican food so much. But not anymore. So it's going to be happening June 11th. And how did it get started? Because, you know, it sounds like, again, sort of the way your cookbook is, this amazing idea that's so obvious, the idea of getting the best taco vendors in the world in L.A., to come together is just such a smart play. So how did you come up with the idea, and how did you make it happen?
Well, LA Weekly actually approached me. They had the idea to do it. Again, you know, I mean, I think that because these things are coming, just exploding, Mexican, Latin American food, Mexican food, and tacos in the United States, LA Weekly decided to do a taco festival. And they came up with the name Tacolandia. And they just needed somebody to put them vendors on the street, so that's me.
So no better than the guy who is the champion of the vendors themselves. So how do you go about picking a vendor? Like, what is it? I mean, you're going to have over 100 vendors this year. You started, I believe, with around 25, but obviously there's even more, 4 times, 5 times, 6 times, 10 times more than that in this city that you can reach out alone. How do you make the cut?
Well, we're looking for people who are doing something special.
Sure.
For the most part. Now, obviously, that gets to be more complicated as you grow bigger. I mean, there are not many Mariscos Jaliscos and Gorilla Tacos and Carnitas El Momo in the city, you know, but there are a lot of good vendors. So looking for people that do something that specialize, that have something special to offer, and are really, or are just really committed to doing what they're doing. So that's what we're looking for the most part.
Let's talk about some of the vendors this year, and specifically what they are serving. Who are you? Is there anyone here that you've never had before, or have you personally?
Oh my gosh! Well, you know, last year we had, I think, a little over 80 vendors.
Wow!
And this year we're over 125 right now. So I would say that there's a lot of new vendors.
What are you excited about? Is there anyone what is the type of taco that most people may have not experienced? That's going to be a Tacolandia.
Well, I'm excited for some of these new places that are doing, like I said, they're kind of expanding on the different combinations of flavors and tacos. There's a place called Balam that's coming. Birrería Jalisco is coming for the first time.
Oh, really?
And they've been a fixture at the Plaza Mexico in Linwood, and I always thought they would be great, and I finally you know, it's really hard to just even to track everybody down all the time. And I was able to catch them, catch the owner, and sit down and talk for a while. And they're joining us this year, you know. Cacao Mexicatessen is always brings really interesting tacos to any event they go to.
I mean, the restaurant alone is very, very interesting and unlike anything. But
yeah.
But they're going to bring something special,
yeah,
sure.
And they're really part of this whole Mexican-American scene that's really expanding here in Los Angeles. And, you know, and we have the full range. I'm Christy Vega's going to be with us from Casa Vega.
Wow.
Christy. And, you know, I also like the old school Mexican-American stuff, too. So we have that for the first time this year, which is really nice. There's a chef from San Diego called Priscilla Curiel, who does really beautiful. I think she might make the most beautiful tacos that I've seen.
What does a beautiful taco look like?
Well, it looks like, you know, it could have been done by hand or not, but it looks like maybe, you know, some tweezers were involved.
Gotcha. some tweezer taco work.
Yes, very precise. But just the color. She really, I think she thinks about colors when she puts her, so it's always very vibrant, you know. Taco doesn't have to be like that.
I mean, look, some tacos are various shades of white, brown, things like that.
You know, when the guy is throwing it into the tortilla and it's just splattering, that's also beauty.
It's a beautiful thing. It's like a pollock in a tortilla. Now, in addition to the food, you're also going to be having a bunch of entertainment, live music and things like that.
Yes, we have live music. You know, the thing is because tacos are such, have really touched all walks in Los
yeah.
Angeles. We get everything from, you know, like college girls out with their friends, sorority girls, like going, like, I'm going to eat 20 tacos, dude, you know. And then you have, you know, the Mexican American community who like the idea of drinking craft beer and tacos. So you have, we're going to have beers there. I mean, you know, every Asians are there, you know, everyone's there. All of LA is going to be represented at this event, and everybody has one thing in common is that they love tacos.
And you're also working with the Vendee Awards, right?
Yes.
Love those people.
Absolutely.
I mean, what they have done for the like street food community across the nation is a mitzvah.
Well, you know, the first year we did an awards the first year, mm-hmm. and a lot of events have their own self-contained awards. But to me, I'm thinking, you know, does this really have any meaning?
Right.
So many of these awards that people get, they're like, you know, you're the best whatever in the world at this little site that has 25 followers.
Within this room, you are the top taco.
So I didn't want to just, you know, and LA Weekly is a huge publication.
Of course.
But I wanted something that had a bigger, like a national reach. And so Vendee's... I've been talking to them about various projects over the years, and I said, "Hey, why don't you guys just come and do your Vendee Awards?" They've tried to come to LA, and they haven't been. It's a tough market. There's a lot of vendors here.
It's spread. I mean, it's just such a wide market.
Yeah, and they don't live here, so it's hard for them to come fly out and know Los Angeles in a weekend or 4 days. This is a way for them to experience. You know, each year they're learning about new vendors that are here.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it also brings a real awards that, you know, that has an award that has meaning to the vendors. I didn't want to just make up an award. So we have the Vendees. The LA Vendees are at Tacolandia. And, you know, the vendors are learning about it every year. They're becoming, like, really concerned. Like, hey, I want to get a, you know, they want to get the Vendee Cup.
Of course. That Vendee Cup is awesome.
Every one of them wants to hold that cup up, you know. And
I think it's probably my favorite award because of also what they stand for and the support they give to people. More than just saying, like, here's an award.
Yeah.
More, you know, here's a trophy. It's got a lot of meaning, a lot of soul behind it.
Yes, and I also really love that I have nothing to do with it. not because I don't want to do it, but I feel like, okay, this is an event that's, you know, I am doing with LA
right.
Weekly,
of
and
course.
I don't want to insert myself into the
no,
awards.
No. You don't want to be the curator and then the picker of the winner. Like, it's too. I get it.
It shouldn't be like that.
It's got to be pure in some ways.
Exactly. So I let the Vendees. They. I mean, I do suggest some judges that are local to help them out, and then they put the rest of the judges together, and then I don't even talk to those people during the day. They're doing their own thing, and I'm just tending to the vendors, and that, you know, I think it's a lot more pure, as you say, pure.
It's great.
And more meaningful.
It is. Well, Bill, I want to thank you. If people want to go to Tacolandia, where can they go?
Well, they just need to go to LA Weekly, LA Weekly's website, and on their phones, it's tacolandia2016.laweekly.com, and online, it's laweekly.com/Tacolandia, and tickets are still available. It's a lot bigger of an event this year, so we still have tickets.
That's awesome. I'm going to be there.
All right.
I'm going to bring the wife. We're going to eat a ton of tacos. It's going to make a day of it.
You have picked a good thing to do that Saturday.
And if people wanted to read your articles, it's Los Angeles Magazine.
Yes.
And if they wanted to follow you on Instagram?
It's Street Gourmet LA, and it's the same on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
Ooh, across the board.
That's right.
How's your snap game?
Pretty solid.
Oh, really? Yeah. My wife and I are going to coerce one of my friends, Jolina, to do a snack chat day where we feed her snacks, and she teaches us how to use that application. But all right, well, now if I need some like 10-second taco stories, I know where to go.
That Tacos al Vapor place from this morning, it's on Snapchat right now.
There you go. Well, Bill, I cannot thank you enough. Congratulations on the book. James Beard, that is, how often have you worn that medal?
I've been tempted to just kind of wear it for a month.
Yeah.
Believe me, I am tempted, but no, I do. It stays at home.
What was that moment like when you won?
Well, you know, I wasn't able to go because I was somewhere else, and I couldn't go. I was really upset about that, and so I was watching on Twitter.
Huh.
I was watching the James Beard Foundation feed and just like nervously refreshing and just like, okay. And then finally, when it came down and I saw it, I go, wait a minute. And I had to read it again. I read it a third time. I was like, wait, is that like mentioning us that we were nominated? Is that?
No.
Oh my God, we won, you know? And then just 2 days ago, the award arrived in the mail.
Amazing.
So that's
Then you should be wearing it. I mean,
that's when I felt it again.
I can't believe you're not wearing it right now. I would just have, or maybe just like out of the back pocket, you know? Anyway, well, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We're going to be stretching our bellies, eating tacos in preparation for Tacolandia.
Yes. Intelligent choice.
Intelligent. We have a song from Lucius, another one of our favorite Brooklyn bands coming up, and you are tuned into Snacky Tunes here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Woman, oh, she's gonna find another.
Nettle Meadow Farm Cheese and Spirits Pairing is a celebration of good food and beverages in the newly restored Barn Loft event venue at Nettle Meadow Farm in Thurman, New York. On Saturday, June 18th, come sample and savor, then buy your favorite cheeses and beverages to take home. Nettle Meadow cheeses have been praised highly in national media and have won prestigious awards from the American Cheese Society. Taste samples of goat and sheep cheeses paired with an array of local regional wines, beers, and ciders. You'll never forget your first sample of rich, creamy Kunik, Nettle Meadow's trademark cheese. In Esquire, our very own Ann Saxelby said, "Kunik, it may very well be the sexiest cheese in the USA." Nettle Meadow Farm is a goat and sheep dairy and cheese company in Thurman, New York, just below Crane Mountain in the Adirondacks, between Gore Mountain, North Creek, and Warrensburg. It's owned and operated by Lorraine Limbiase and Sheila Flanagan. Both have a great love of animals, artisan cheese, and the unique challenges of farm life. Nettle Meadow Farm was originally founded in 1990, and it's the home of over 300 goats, dozens of sheep, and a variety of farm sanctuary animals. Again, the cheese and spirits pairing is Saturday, June 18th. For more information and tickets, visit NettleMeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, MeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com.
Welcome back. We are live in studio with, huh? Did I get that right? Did I say, you know? A lot of familiar faces around here from the past years in Brooklyn. You want to go around and introduce yourselves?
Yeah. Hey, I'm Carrie Ann.
Hey.
Hi, I'm Tia.
And I'm Molly.
I mean, the previous bands that you have all played in are like the greatest hits of like the last decade of Brooklyn.
The two of us, for sure. Yeah. She's new to town.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Detroit?
Detroit, yeah.
Okay. What brought you to here from Detroit?
I got a job at FIT.
Oh. So. What are you doing at FIT?
I'm a visual resources curator, which is a really fancy way of saying that I help faculty find the images and visuals that they need.
That is a really good job.
Yeah,
so
I
like
love
you, you know the deep dark corners of the internet.
Basically, yeah.
Like if someone needs like a walrus inspiration photo, you're like, I got you.
Yeah, I got it. And I can clear the rights on it.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, I'll okay. get sued. It'll be all good.
But between the Tia and Carrie, like I mean, it's seriously, like I've seen you in so many different formations. You want to like run through
greatest hits.
Greatest hits.
The Fugue.
Love the Fugue. I mean, you can stop right there. Greatest hit of all time.
Pygmy Shrews, Queening. Those are probably like the biggest ones.
I had Bad Credit, No Credit, as you know, because we were in here.
As I know, former Snackatoon's guest.
And Clapper Claw, my solo project, which is still somewhat active.
So how did Huh, which I just want to work into as many different ways as I can, come to be?
Well, I was a huge fan of Tia And Tia said she wasn't in a band, and I thought that was really fucked up.
So, yeah, then I remember we drank together a couple of times, and it was just obviously happening.
Yeah.
You know. And then, like, as you kind of, like, want to move from drinks to actual songwriting, I mean, since you're already in other projects and you're in other projects, what is it that you feel like, you know, here's another way to kind of, like, get a voice out there, and, like, what did you want to start to say with this new project?
That's a great heavy question.
Yeah. I don't know. We had a whole bunch of, like, different people in the band over the past, like, year or two, and I feel like it started out a little bit more, like, jokey, like, pop music, and then it became less jokey pop music.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I remember pitching this to you, like, you know, if nobody is out there, like, making music, like, who's making our music, like, for us? Because I can't really think of anybody who's doing what, you know, I want to hear.
And, like, and hear like what was, like, the, you know, the infamous, like, put a piece of paper on a telephone pole and be like, here are influences, if you're into these bands.
Oh, that was fun. The first time we got together, I passed around a sheet of paper and had everybody write 4 bands or something.
I feel like we all said Aerosmith. Am I remembering that right?
I didn't.
Okay. You are not remembering that right at all.
But Aerosmith is definitely
75% of us said Aerosmith.
What were some of the other, what was the other bands that were on that list?
I had Dead Boys, I remember.
I remember just saying, like, I'm old and I'm going to be myself, and I think the next band I put down was, like, Van Halen.
Yeah. It's like, and it's like, from that list, I mean, can you, like, find those influences in your music, or was that just, like, a starting conversation point?
I think a bit.
I can hear it a little bit sometimes, but getting Ryan, our drummer, really changed everything, too.
How did that change things?
She's got a lot of emo in her. And I think it modernized us quite a lot from our dad rock influences.
Yeah, emo and, like, marching band chops.
Yeah.
And that was, like, really fun to work with. I feel like I came up with things that I never would have popped into my head if she hadn't been drumming.
Right.
Can we hear a song? And just for everyone, Ryan is not here.
Ryan's not here.
So no percussion. Hi, Ryan.
She's in the spirit.
We're unplugged, which we're kind of excited about.
This is so we
were, like,
exciting.
Now we're
this
all set happened. If MTV ever brings it back. We're good
to go. I think they are bringing it back.
I think they are, too.
Dude, but that's so great.
But I also think, like that type of thing never goes away. I think, like, in modern day, we know that, like, nothing's ever, like, gone. It's just, like, someone's like, I think we can make money off of this now. And then they just, like, dust it off. What's the first song you're going to play for us?
It's called Dark. And we're going to have a video coming out really soon that's done by Elizabeth Weinberg.
Okay. Let's talk about... I mean, again, song, another okay. greatest... Another great
yeah.
hit.
Yeah.
Hey, Eliz, what up? All right. Well, here we go live on Snacky Tunes.
I'm share. I understand it, I just don't care. I'm not avoidant. It's always been there.
I realize I've never heard the term mom rock. dad rock, I mean, yeah, but like mom rock, like, that's not a thing, is it?
Is that like the Indigo Girls? Or?
I would think mom rock is like yacht rock.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I mean, I really don't think I've ever heard the, that's a classic mom rock song.
Oh, maybe we can do that.
Yeah. Because, like, Indigo Girls is not, that's about, not like, mom rock.
Maybe, like, yeah, my mom would actually kill me if she...
But Riot Girl, a lot of those Riot Girls are now moms.
Right.
So
right.
It could be that Riot Girl is just, like...
Our mom?
Yeah. I mean, so it's, like, I mean, just to kind of put it out there. Because, right. There is, definitely some, really great Feel the Trees vibes going on here. that, it's super great to have sitting here in the studio.
Thanks.
I know you say your drummer modernized you away from dad rock. So, what were the four influences that Ryan put down to bring?
She wasn't there that day.
Oh, she wasn't.
She just was an influence.
Yeah, just her. Yeah, her way of playing.
Yeah. So you said that the video was shot with Eliz.
Yeah, and we weren't there. It was all Eliz's idea.
Oh, really?
It was all her, conception, and I was just like, yeah, that's great, sure.
Did you see the final product?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. It's not like one of those things where you're like, ooh, I don't, ooh.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. It's so beautiful. Like, she's such a great photographer, and it's her work. It's just like it.
She's amazing. There's someone I did not think that would continue to be woven in and out of my life. I met her when I was 18. She lived on the floor above me at BU.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when she was the, she's going to hate this, but the Guster webmaster.
Okay.
which she will definitely hate for this. When this airs, she'll just be like, screw you, man. How was it, working from it? It's such an interesting thing to give control for, and I've always kind of thought about bands that are not in the videos, obviously they have some presence of it, but it's a lot of trust within within that. So what was the, conversation or collaboration based on what you wanted and how you kind of put the song together?
As the song, not the video, or?
Well, no, I mean, from putting the song together, how that kind of fed into the video that you were not physically there with a close up or,
Yeah, I mean,
the band running around.
I guess we had shot around the idea of doing a road trip video. So it definitely, there was an idea that there would be movement in the video, that there's a journey or something, and there's an escape. But she changed it quite a lot and made it a lot better.
She's like, no.
Yeah, that's Eliz all the way. She's like, yeah, that's been done.
Yeah.
but it's a video about a little girl on a paper route. Not a little girl, a teenage girl.
I was going to say, she just put her kid in it.
She put a bunch of kids in it.
She's just like,
She's
like, I've got to host the after school thing, so we're just going to put him in
a
video.
She puts her little boy in a wig.
Yeah. So as the project evolves, I mean, I know you have an EP. It's, you know, what kind of, you know, comes from that? Is it touring? Is it like running more together? It's like, I mean, you've both been in such bands, and I'm guessing that you came from bands as well.
Yeah.
Like, now that you, it's kind of like relationships, right? Like, you always have like your first love and everything, and then maybe that doesn't work out and you get older. But like, as you kind of like get to older bands, like, do you feel like the process comes easier? There's things that you learned, or, you know, how does that kind of structure or approach change?
Everyone's looking at me.
I mean, you survived the fugue, so, like, you know.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this was definitely, like, faster and easier to just say. I think at this age, everybody's just more like, okay, here's what I would like to do, and here's what I would not like to do.
Right? Yeah.
It's very clear, like...
It's like sex. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when and what we're doing, you know, when we're doing stuff, what we're doing, and, you know, when, why. And I don't know, I feel like I'm also just much more comfortable, like, letting the pop flag fly. And that feels really good.
But I mean, like, for, like, letting the pop flag fly, or being more open to suggestions, is it more like, you've been ground, down by previous bands, or you, have more of an understanding, like, maybe we can just try it this way, and it's like a you know, something new that you might not have been open to before in the past.
Oh, that's a really good way of putting it. I think, yeah, I think now it's more like, it's much more collaborative. I think as a young person, I don't know about anybody else here that's written music, but
I used to get
very sentimentally attached to, like, ideas just, like, because I'd had them for a while or because they were there.
This is now, my idea.
Exactly. It's like, no, but I've had that since high school, and it needs to be the way it is. It's like, no, it doesn't.
I start realizing how many decisions are arbitrary, and I'm so grateful to be in a band with other people that will make those arbitrary decisions also, because I think in the past mine haven't been collaborative because people just wait for me to tell them what to do.
Oh, interesting. So it's like just like, okay, this is moving past. Yes, yes, no, 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 yes, no. Okay, now we're on to the next thing.
I don't know. This is beyond just like us being older and whatever. I think it's just a good group of people that is not overly defensive and just really wants to make good songs. So.
Yeah, and I think too, like, just coming from another state, something about New York, everyone here is just very, like, on the ball, I feel like, and so I feel like we're able to get things done quickly, especially because we pay by the hour for our practice fees. So it's like, we're gonna get it done, you know, and that's been really nice.
Well, I mean, they always say, like, from constraint comes the most creativity. If you have, like, all the resources all the time, there's no tension.
Right.
There's nothing to, like, rally or fight against. I also wonder, you two also mentioned about, like, you know, churning through some band members, which maybe, like, when you were younger, you're like, oh, here are the four people in the room, we're gonna be in a band, and, like, 3 years later, you're like, I can't believe I just spent 3 years with that person. I didn't even like them on the first day.
Yeah.
Do you want to play another song for us?
Sure.
What's this one?
This one's called Stockholm, and it features me singing in really bad French.
Oh. Whoops.
Damn capo.
I know. Not used to it.
Thank you.
made love like we could never last. We could never last. And I could never
I think that you can say that you do something poorly before you do it. I think you have to like let people make their own judge. Like I would have never thought anything. And I was like, oh, maybe that is bad. I don't know. I don't know.
I played the recording for one of my French friends, and he was like, "You really need to enunciate."
Yeah, I mean that's like if I were to like cook for like a 3-star chef, he'd be like, "You really need to learn how to cook." So it's like setting yourself up for most people. That's like. Yeah, you don't need to say that.
But my justification for... Well, you know, I know my French friends will listen, so I have to disclaim it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I got it. Oh, okay. Well, then I'm sorry. I apologize on your behalf as well. We're really sorry.
But I think they should also probably apologize to me for many decades of French people singing in terrible accents.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, yeah. I mean, everyone's at fault here. EP out, and then what kind of comes next? Tour? More
That's
writing?
That's the big question, you know. I don't really understand how this business works right now.
we don't have like enough time left in the episode to talk about that. There's some great reading on the internet.
Right. We're just trying to put out music and see what happens. And, you know. It's there. It'll be there real soon.
Okay. That's vague and open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Much like most of my life.
So. Yeah, okay. but any New York shows coming up or anything?
The 5th of June at Sunnyvale is our EP release show. And then I'm gone all summer, so.
Oh. Where are you off to?
France.
Oh. Oh, I know where you can, like, get better at this.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we want to thank you for coming on the show today. So good to run into you on the subway.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I mean, if I could run into someone on the subway every day and they'd be like, I have a band for the show, I would like never have to do any work ever again.
I was like really hesitant to say hi because it's like the morning.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know.
I mean, I don't know. I
we
feel
go
like,
back.
I feel like it can go both ways on that. Like,
right.
Oh, you can read if people are just like, oh, yeah, not today. But no, I mean, I always still think it's magic that in a city of all these people at a specific time, you chose the same car, even like a specific spot. So it's like,
right.
I think that's like a little bit of like New York magic that you run into people on the subway.
The subway churns up people and puts them in your face. It
yeah.
It really
does. I tried to run to a friend who runs at the same time, and every time I try, I never do it. But every time I don't try, it's like a magical morning thing. So where can people find the EP? Reach out to you, send you grammar lessons.
We have a Facebook that's Hun New York, HUNEWYORK, and a Bandcamp under that too. So
okay, great. Well, thanks for coming on. What are you gonna take us out with?
This one's called Anis.
Oh, nice. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week.
First was long ago. Maybe the imperial nature is coursing through them bones. And I was taught to believe there's no limit to the love that I can give. But if I keep pursuing science, I just might locate it. come I say, never do a thing they say. Distract me with their eyes, and I start to fantasize. And I drink their anise cocktails, and the story's there again. It's just an experiment I conduct when I wanna get a drink. And I'm doing this for science. And I'm doing this for science. And I'm doing this for science. And I'm doing this. So blunt, they take you by the arm and lead you to their flats, then turn on the old world charm and in flyover land. I was taken by a man who loved me in a barn. I thanked my lucky star.
Talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.